But you should all know that whatever time you put into the Bhagavad Gita is so practical for both of application to our own lives personally and in addition to that for preaching, for helping others. It's so practical. And we should learn how to see through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita. See the world through the vision granted by the Bhagavad Gita. You can move it. Now the sixth chapter, what's the connection between the fifth chapter and the sixth chapter? Now even without going over anything in the sixth chapter, it could be... Yes?
First of all, the verses where it comes to the foundation of this chapter already opened the
Sanyasa Yoga. Okay, now what?
As well.
Right.
The second part is that the super soul was discussed in the third and fourth section of the Asking Point. So there was a glimpse to discussing the super soul, which is basically connected to yoga meditation, meditation from the super soul.
Okay. Did you want to add anything? The basic. You've covered the basic points, but the only point I would beg to differ from you from was there's not exactly a glimpse of the super soul in the fifth chapter. There's actual pointing to the fact that to get liberation from astanga through the practice of nishkam karma, one knowledge increases to the point of the super soul. See? Knowledge is the thing that elevates one in consciousness. When our knowledge comes to the point of view of understanding that we're not our body, then we can be detached. And that type of knowledge is knowledge born of goodness. But when we understand that we're not our body, we can understand that if we're taking it as in a step-by-step way, that's actually Jnana Yoga. And that is not necessarily bhakti yoga. So what is that realization of jnana yoga that you're not your body? It is impersonal. It is understanding aham brahmasmi, that I am spirit, I am not matter. But one doesn't only, if one is practicing jnana yoga or something like this, one doesn't only think that I am spirit, he thinks that everything is spirit. And spirit is all pervading. Brahman is all pervading. Then, when his knowledge increases, he understands that yes, spirit is all pervading, but how is it all pervading? It is all pervading through the super soul. So then, his knowledge goes from Brahmeti to Paramatmeti. So when he understands that the super soul, that the Lord is all pervading through the super soul, then his knowledge is more increased. Now the tendency, if one is a Mayavadi or a Brahmavadi even, to think that, to identify the self who he is as Brahman with the super soul as Brahman emerge. And Shankaracharya, where Krishna explains how there's no other way other than devotional service, bhakti phananiya shakyo, only you can understand bhakti-mam avijananti, you can only understand through devotional service. Shankaracharya agrees. And he says, yes, you perform devotional service for the purpose of merging. So, when one knowledge increases, actually, when one hears through the parampara, the proper parampara, and his knowledge increases, that he understands that yes, there is a super soul, and yes, I am spirit. And then he understands that the super soul is the supreme soul, and I am... Tiny, I am Anu, and he is Vibhu, and Prabhupada explains all this clearly in the purports. Then he becomes, he can begin some kind of devotional service, like devotional service. And then the next step, and then he becomes liberated, right? When he understands the super soul, he becomes liberated. And then the next step, which comes out in this, only in chapter 6, it's been hinted at actually in chapter 5, but it comes out clearly in chapter 6 that the super soul is an expansion of Krishna. So Krishna is the source of the super soul, and then when one's bhakti is directed towards him, one becomes a devotee to Krishna. So, what brings one from one level of realization to the other? And what makes one jump from one level of the yoga ladder to another if one is taking it step by step? The answer is association. And therefore, the most fortunate thing that can happen to one, regardless of whatever stage he's at, he's situated in, either he's the grossest materialist or a greatly elevated jnani or a greatly elevated yogi, is association with a devotee, a pure devotee. Because then he'll, whatever realization he has, will jump right to the ladder of bhakti. But if one starts from the ladder of bhakti from the beginning, immediately whatever realizations he gets, that I'm not my body or the super soul, they're immediately realized in the frame of reference of bhakti, not as individual separate realization. So therefore, Bhagavatam says, Advaya Gyan, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaneti Savite, that there is one non-dual truth that is realized in three different stages. There's Brahman, there's Paramatma and Bhagavan. But there's only one truth, there's not three truths, there's one truth, absolute truth. So the yoga ladder, on one hand, it's taking us through all these different stages, explaining what the realization of the jnani is, realization of the karmakanda is. But the bhakti, or doing it the way Krishna recommends, through not renouncing work, and as Prabhupada always puts in the purports and his translations, instead of saying nishkam karma, he says devotional service. Instead of saying buddhi yoga, he explains as devotional service, because if one takes this more confidential view of it through devotional service, then one achieves those realizations but ultimately achieves Krishna. Well, if one becomes a jnani yogi, and if we translated it less confidentially and more literally, if one takes it from the jnani yoga point of view, one will stop at jnani yoga and not necessarily reach Bhagavan realization, unless he's very fortunate. That powerful association, like the Kumaras, they went to Vaikuntha as Brahmavadis. And when they, and Brahmavadi means that one's mind is completely unagitated, it's non-dual, it's like Stita Pragya, seeing everything is the same, completely peaceful, situated in Brahman, non-duality. But when they smelt the fragrance of the tulsi leaves, not even directly, but being carried by the breezes from Lord Narayan's feet, their minds became disturbed. And they became devotees. And they were already impossible for them to be disturbed by something material, or to be transformed in any way by something material. So it was completely spiritual what moved their minds. And they became devotees. And this is explained in the 7th chapter, that how one who is on this Brahman, Brahmabhuta level or Jnana level, Samahavasadolabha, when he comes to Krishna consciousness, he is so dear to Krishna because he's not coming with any material desires. So anyway, this is all explained gradually. This yoga ladder is very wonderful. It's subtle, it's tricky, but it's wonderful. It puts all the different Vedic systems of advancement in perspective, and it puts bhakti in the perspective as the ultimate purpose of all these different kinds of yogas, austerities, tapasyas, and karma, or jagas, and ultimately of all transcendental knowledge.
Is it what you're saying, and that one gets in contact with the beauty body, one immediately is in the top of the ladder, whereas otherwise one has to go step by step?
Not one is immediately at the top of the ladder, but in one sense one is immediately at the top of the ladder, because one is has the goal of the top of the ladder, and but one is in an immature state at the bottom of the ladder. He's at the top of the ladder, but in an immature state. So someone may be more superficially, a jnani may be more realized than him about Brahman, but the devotee is considered more advanced, even though he's maybe more immature, because his goal has been properly established, and it's to get to that goal, he's going to be there quicker than the jnani. The jnani may never get there. And they commit spiritual suicide and merge in Brahman.
Like an elevator.
Huh?
It's like an elevator compared to a stair.
Right, so someone may be superficially... someone may be superficially on the stairs, very good example, at a higher place, that the person, a person may be on the ground floor, but on the elevator, the person may be on the fourth floor of the 100-story building walking up the stairs, but who is actually... in the more fortunate and advanced position. Obviously the person on the elevator.
But he still has to pass through different stages.
But it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different thing. Yes, he has to pass through it, but there's no noticing it practically, because his, because what he's noticing is his attraction to Krishna growing. So he's not having to pull out every little weed of material attachment from his heart. His attraction to Krishna automatically removes that. That's Krishna Surya Sam Maya Hai Andhakar. That when there is sunlight, automatically the darkness is dissipated. But the other way is like sweeping the darkness out with a broom, and then after the darkness is removed, then bringing the light in. It's not really the process. But as soon as there is attraction to Krishna, when it rises in the heart, see, Haridas Thakur, well, I can see we're going to get far in the sixth chapter today. But there was a discussion between Haridas Thakur and so many Brahmins, and one offensive caste Brahmin named Gopal Chakravarti in the house of Govardhan and Haranya Majumdar, the uncle and father of Raghunath Das Goswami. And they were saying, and Yadunath Acharya was saying that the holy names are so powerful that it gives liberation. And Haridas Thakur explained that liberation comes automatically as a mere byproduct of the rising of the holy name within the heart. As in the abbas, in the shadow of the holy name arising. And but the real purpose of what the holy name really can award is prema, or love of Krishna, prema bhakti. So this caste Brahmin, Smarta Brahmin, Gopal Chakravarti, took issue with this, and he said that how is it possible that the holy name can give liberation like that, when one has to practice vanashrama for hundreds and hundreds of births, and then maybe he'll get it. Maybe hundreds of births as a Brahmin. One may get liberation from the three modes. How is it possible? And he didn't say, how is it possible? He said, it's not possible. And if the holy name can give liberation in that way, then I'll cut off your nose, he told. He had the audacity to speak like this to Namacharya Haridas Thakur. Said, if the holy name can give liberation, I'll cut off your nose. And Haridas Thakur said, not necessary. If the holy name can't give liberation, I'll cut off my own nose. But then, as a result of that offense, Gopal Chakravarti's proud nose fell off within a few days due to leprosy. Because just automatically, just like when the sun arises, at the abhas of the sun, just at the semblance, before it's actually arisen, all darkness is immediately dispelled. And therefore all fear of thieves and rogues disappears. So similarly, just when the holy name, even before it's rising in the heart, then one is liberated. And liberation cannot compare to the real gift of the holy name, which is prema, the love of Krishna. So when one loves Krishna, and if one is on the path of bhakti, there is nothing, no one can offer him or bribe him or give him anything that can make him, can move him from his determination to serve Krishna, like Vilamanga Thakur said, the Mukti lady is standing there with folded arms at my door saying, what can I do for you? And his reply was, what is the need or value of Mukti when Krishna himself is coming every day to bring you milk? So Mukti, one paisa. Bhakti, 10 zillion crores. So if you have 10 zillion crores and someone says to you, here is one paisa, you think, big deal. If that, you wouldn't even look at him. What to speak of. So someone who's actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, this is his viewpoint. Something like that. The sweetness, the Kumaras, who were the guru of all the impersonalists, became convinced just by the fragrance of the Tulsi. Sukadev Goswami, known as the Jnani impersonalist, so when he heard the Bhagavatam verses, immediately, Bhakta. These are the two most famous examples.
If I understand well, he said also that not just for the term Guru Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, he was within six or
expansion. Not, no, that's the confidential meaning. That's Krishna's actual meaning. But he's explained it in other ways, because if it was just bhakti, 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 everyone wouldn't read. Because there's jnani, jnani, karmakandi, karmakandi, and they wouldn't be interested. Or they say, oh, just this is bhaktis, they're teaching for bhaktis. But to bring everyone in, Krishna has explained it in stages. But his confidential meaning is described in the 18th chapter, Sarvadamam Prityaja. Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Mamekam, to me only surrender. That's Krishna's purpose. But he's explained it in this way. Actually, the Bhagavad Gita could have been written, it could have been finished in 3 verses only. And it could have been a very short book, easy to distribute, a few pictures or whatever. But who would read it like that? But this Bhagavad Gita is so big because it has something for everyone. And then ultimately, after giving you those things that you are interested in, practice this type of Astanga Yoga, or practice this type of Jnana Yoga, or practice this type of Karmakanda, after giving those things to you, Krishna says at the end, Sarvadamam Prityaja, now give them up and just surrender to me. This is Krishna's trickiness. His affection, his compassion, and not only that, just to get us to listen at all, he set up the entire battle of Kurukshetra with its millions of people, because everyone likes a good battle scene. Like everyone is saying, now, you know, who will, when, who, what will happen in Kuwait? Everyone is eager to understand, because who's going to win in this great battle? Because it's natural to, battles are attractive. We want to know. So in the middle of this battle, where everyone wants to know who's going to win, when our hearts are open and our ears are open, and Krishna places the gem of the Bhagavad Gita in our ears and in our heart. And then ultimately he says, give it all up except Sarvadamam Prityaja, because this is the thing that will actually satisfy the soul. Mahaitukiya Pratyata Yatma Sufasigati. We should become convinced that nothing else will make us happy. Nothing is sweet. Madhuram, you know that verse? Madhuram, Madhuram. You know that verse? Yeah. Do you know the English meaning? Sweet. Most sweet, Krishna. And Krishna's dealings with the residents of Vrindavan are so sweet that Rupa Goswami has teased us in Bhakti Rasamrita and the Nectar Devotion by saying, if you want to maintain your family attachment and your love for your children and house and country, etc., do not go and see Govinda. Don't go and see him because all your material attachments will be ruined. Your life will be ruined. Your nice peace that you've been working so hard and thinking that you're so happy with your bank balance and nice, wonderful children and so cute and everything. Your satisfaction is going to be ruined because he will capture your heart and he won't give it back. So don't go and see Govinda, says Rupa Goswami. So now we have to talk about Dhyana Yoga. What? Could I repeat the link? Krishna has explained how to get to the platform of liberation in 5 through Nishkam Karma. That when one is working, one's knowledge is increasing because one is working on the proper consciousness and by proper association and by hearing Shastra, one's knowledge increases. And when one understands and one is getting purified, one understands the Super Soul and becomes absorbed in the Super Soul through devotion, then one gets liberated. Right? Now Krishna is going to explain the same path of liberation or the same goal of liberation, how to achieve that through a different process, the process of Astanga Yoga. Because everyone knows about Astanga Yoga. When one wants to know the relationship between Nishkam Karma and Astanga Yoga, etc. And that's why. That's the link. Therefore, I think we better begin this chapter at least. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work." So here's the third time that Krishna is making this point. Not to give up work. And the one who is the renounced person, the true mystic, is one who renounces the fruit of his work while working in a dutiful way. He is the advanced soul. This is what Krishna wants of Arjuna, and is the basic prescription that he is giving. Do your work, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Lights no fire refers to performing the Brahmins. One of their prescribed duties is to perform daily Agnihotra, or fire sacrifice. So he who thinks, "I have knowledge, or I want to get knowledge, now I don't have to do my duties," is not the advanced soul, but one who performs his duty with detachment. So Krishna is saying this again. Why is he saying this? Because he just described Astanga Yoga. And what is Astanga Yoga? When one goes to the forest and performs yoga. So we don't get confused. Krishna is explaining this here. Now he's also explaining, actually, and this comes out very, very quickly, in the first section. What's the first section as you have it written? In 6? Right. So the first section is going to explain that even Astanga Yogis, like Nishkam Karmis, engage in detached work to advance. And he'll explain at what stage in Astanga Yoga one can give up the practice of Nishkam Karma. That's what we have to look forward to. Even in Astanga Yoga, one shouldn't give up work in the beginning. Therefore, Krishna explains the same point in 2, and then he'll explain the point I just made in 3. What is called renunciation, or sannyas, you should know to be the same as yoga. So, many times Krishna has used the term yoga. Here he means Astanga Yoga, but it also means Karma Yoga. They're both considered to be Jnana Yoga and renunciation of work, or Karma Sannyasa, considered to be the same, and Sankhya Yoga, renunciation of work, and Yoga and Astanga Yoga are considered to be work, working with the organs of the body. What is called renunciation or sannyas? You should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So here is the essence It's the renunciation has to be done of the desire for sense enjoyment. That's the real renunciation. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, Astanga Yoga work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So the idea is that there are two particular stages that Prabhupada explains in the purport. One is called Yoga Rukshu. Yoga Rukshu, that's the beginning stage, and a higher stage is called Yoga Rudha. Krishna is going to define these in some ways later on. Yoga Rukshu, in the beginning, one has to work because one is not detached enough to give up work. There are, in the Astanga Yoga system, how many different stages are there? Eight. Very good. Chris was seeing who was listening. Asta means eight. Astanga Yoga, there are eight different stages. The first one's on Yam Niyam, following the rules and regulations. That's two. Then after one learns to follow the rules and regulations to some degree, then one practices asanas, or the sitting postures, which are what people commonly think of when they think of yoga or hatha yoga. But that's only one of the eight different steps. Then the fourth step is pranayama. And only after one is expert in asanas should one practice pranayama. And if one practices pranayama or breathing exercises before one is expert in asanas and his body is in the proper state, one can cause so much trouble to himself, including insanity and other wonderful states of consciousness. You can go crazy because the life air has become unbalanced. One plays with the kundalini and does all kinds of crazy things, and one can really ruin his life. And that's what happens when people don't follow under the guidance of the spiritual master. So then the fifth stage, after that, after one, the purpose of the pranayama is what? To control the mind. Right. And then after controlling the mind, one does pratyahara, or withdraws the mind from sense objects, because there's a very intimate connection between breathing and the mind. And if one breathes, learns the pranayama, one can control his mind, then pratyahara, withdraws the senses from the sense objects. And then when one is detached in that way, then one begins dharan and then dhyan, which are different intensities of meditation, and finally samadhi, which is when the mind and the consciousness is fully focused on, if you're a jnani, it's focused on Brahman, meditating in Brahman. If you're a Patanjali yogi, it's focused on the super soul. And if you're a bhakti yogi, it's focused on Krishna. The consciousness, different kinds of samadhi. So, in the third text, it describes how in the beginning, Yoga Rurukshu, one works in Nishkam Karma and practices yoga part-time. That's part of his yoga, actually, but he practices these other things part-time. Then, when one is elevated in yoga Rudha, then one can give up Nishkam Karma. The Yoga Rudha stage is defined, where one is within, where he can give up Nishkam Karma. A person is said to be elevated in yoga, that's Yoga Rudha, as in the last line of the verse, it's Yoga Rudha Taruchite. This is called Yoga Rudha. A person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. So this is the stage, there's comparisons to Nishkam Karma. He's in knowledge, full knowledge, like that. Now the next section, so this first section was, in even our abbreviated form, I call it Advancing in Yoga Through Detached Work, where Astanga Yogis, like Nishkam Karma Yogis, engage in detached work to advance. Then, the next section, 5-9, what do you have it as written as?
Stages in the yogi's renunciation and control of his mind.
Right. So in 5-9, in regard to the mind, what is the state of Yoga Rudha in regard to the mind by which one can give up work. There's a definition of that in 5-9. I've written here, when a yogi's control of his mind achieves the stage of regarding well-wishes, the envious, the pious, the sinners equally, he may then even give up his nishkam karma work. So 5-9. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So, the mind must, and as said in the previous verse, must renounce the desire for sense gratification. Why? Because if it doesn't, then it will degrade one, not elevate one. This is why, to attain this stage, one's mind has to be controlled. This is why. Otherwise, it will pull one down. For him who has conquered his mind, the mind is the best of friend. If the mind is controlled, it's the friend. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So now, in the next verses, it's going to describe the symptoms of one who has controlled his mind and is on this stage. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. He's on the yoga ruddha stage. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Now, a person is said to be established in self-realization, is called a yogi or mystic, when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. So that is the thing that satisfies him, is his gyan and vigyan, his knowledge and his realization. He's satisfied with that. He's not looking externally for something else. He's actually satisfied. And to do this, one has to have control of his mind. And the word that means controlled mind, satisfied in mind, is that's chitta atma. That's in the end of the first line. And the only way that one can be satisfied, his mind can be satisfied, a living entity can be satisfied, another meaning of chitta atma, is like an anvil being beaten by a blacksmith. That's what one has to do practically to his mind to get it to be satisfied with jnana and vijnana and not sense gratification. One has to beat it like a blacksmith beats an anvil. So a person is said to be established in self-realization, is called a yogi or mystic, when he's fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence. And he's self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, as the same. And this is the qualification of this yoga ruddha stage where one can give up work, nishkam karma. Now, a person is still considered further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, the neutral mediators. So it's in three things. The ones who are the envious friends and enemies on one hand, the people who hate you, and then the ones who are well-wishers and affectionate benefactors, and then the neutral. All three of those he looks at equally. And this is so difficult to not become involved in friends and enemies and other such politics. It's so difficult that it's even more difficult than looking at pebbles, stones, and gold as the same. This is the most difficult because the tendency is when someone likes you, you think that they have very good discrimination and they're very intelligent. And when someone doesn't like you and sees faults, what an envious person he is, and he deserves to be kicked out of something or another. So this is very difficult, extremely advanced. So this is the stages one has to be on to actually be advanced enough to give up work in the Ashtanga Yoga system. Now, that's up to 9. That's the stages, the mental stages needed to give up work. Then, further stages in the practice of yoga. This is the big section, 10 to 32. Now in the detailed sheet that you have there, it lists in detail all these different stages, and there's much detailed information about what practice of yoga actually is.
We've summarized it by saying it just describes the practices of Astanga Yoga as well as the results and the Yoga Ruta perfectional stage and ultimately the vision of and service to the Supersoul, which is the goal of yoga. So now, although I'm not going to stop, you should look at your book while I'm reading the page, the pages, the newer pages that should be inserted in the book, give a much more accurate and detailed explanation of how this, of the details of this section as it develops. So now, when one is on this stage of Yoga Ruta and sees like that, he's going to begin his practice, and that's what's going to be described. Now first, a general description of the yoga practices that one who is on the Yoga Ruta stage should begin. A transcendentalist should always engage his body, mind, and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place. That ekaki means alone. That means not even with one's disciples. One should live alone and should carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. So now one can see why one has to be on this very advanced stage to actually take up this kind of yoga, because one has to live alone, free from fear, not attached to anything. Now here, the place of practice is explained, and how to sit, and how to focus its mind to get power. You can't even use someone else's asana, you have to have your own asana. This is very, very tricky business. You're not allowed to rock back and forth, you have to sit perfectly still. To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusa grass on the ground and then cover it with a deer skin and soft cloth. Why a deer skin? Because, you know, keeps away snakes. And why is it important to keep away snakes? Huh? Because what?
You'll be there for 10,000.
But why is it important to keep away snakes? To know that no snakes are going to come. Because you're going to be afraid all the time. A snake's going to come and bite me. So you're sitting on the deer skin, that's one less thing you have to worry about so you can think about Krishna. The seat should neither be too high nor too low, should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and practice yoga to purify the heart by controlling his mind, senses, and activities, and fixing the mind on one point. Now, how to meditate? This achalam means fixed, not achalam means, and stira means not flickering or rocking or anything, fixed. One should hold one's body, neck, and head straight, erect in a straight line, and stare steadily at the tip of the nose. Thus, with an unagitated, subdued mind, devoid of fear, completely free from sex life, one should meditate upon me within the heart and make me the ultimate goal of life. So sitting erect, achalam fixed, not rocking, looking at the tip of the nose, completely fearless, complete brahmacharya, mind completely withdrawn from sense gratification and sense objects. This is yoga practice, Astanga Yoga. Now what is the result? Thus practicing the control of the body, mind, and activities, the mystic transcendentalist, his mind regulated, attains to the kingdom of God or the abode of Krishna by cessation of material existence. So this occurs after a long time. And also, if one practices yoga and is attempting to achieve siddhis, one won't attain this result, mystic powers. So there's three great flaws in the other practices of karma, jnana, and yoga that make it them not desirable. They are great temptations. In bhakti, no such thing exists. But in karma yoga, the tendency is to become attached to the fruits of karma kanda. In sakama yoga, there's a tendency to become attached to the fruits of one's work and sense gratification. In jnana, because that's the first result you achieve. In jnana, the tendency is to get to become merged into Brahman and think this is wonderful and not want to serve anyone. So this is a big trap. And in Astanga Yoga, there's a tendency to want to get mystic powers and to become extremely powerful. And these things are all available in these processes. But in bhakti yoga, one has to scrupulously avoid these because they're all hindrances. And one just keeps his mind on the service of Krishna. More on practices 16 and 17. There's no possibility of one's becoming a yogi or Arjuna if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. One quarter air in your eating, one quarter water and half with food, balanced in eating and sleeping. No mating and defending. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Now here is another definition of the perfected stage. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to be well established in yoga. Now here's an example of a yogi who's on that level. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist, whose mind is controlled, remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. How does he feel when he's in that position? This is that Brahman platform from the point of view of yoga, which has been described from the point of view of sthita pragya, fixed in knowledge or transcendence, and in other places here it's going to be described, because one achieves the same platform, but one's goal is different. So we say, therefore, for instance, the bhakti yogi, he's on this platform, he's these things, but he has no attachments, he's equal in these things, but he is attached, on the other hand, to the spiritual. So it's materially detached, materially equipoised, but spiritually completely addicted and attached. So more here's symptoms of how that yogi who in transcendence feels. In that stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulties. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. So one type of a jnani, a yogi, or a person practicing this type of yoga to merge, he will attain Brahman in this way. But someone who's very fortunate can attain the super soul of Krishna in this way. One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith and not be deviated from the path. One should abandon without exception all material desires born of mental speculation and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. So the result of yoga was described in 20, is described in 20 through 23, and 24 and 25 will describe how this result is obtained. And the first principles are determination and faith. And without strong faith, is it possible to have determination? Certainly not. If you don't trust in your goal and your methods, how will you be determined? So that faith is that if I follow these processes, I will obtain success. And then one can be determined. And Prabhupada, in the purport, tells the nice story. As for determination, one should follow the example of the sparrow who lost her eggs on the waves of the ocean. A sparrow laid her eggs on the shore of the ocean, but the big ocean carried away the eggs on its waves. The sparrow became very upset and asked the ocean to return her eggs. The ocean did not even consider her appeal, so the sparrow decided to dry up the ocean. Quite a task. She began to pick out the water in her small beak, and everyone laughed at her for her impossible determination. The news of her activity spread, and at last Garuda, the gigantic bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, heard it. He became compassionate towards the small sister bird, and so he came to see the sparrow. Garuda was very pleased by the determination of the small sparrow, and he promised to help. Thus Garuda at once asked the ocean to return her eggs, lest he himself take up the work of the sparrow. The ocean was frightened at this and returned the eggs. Thus the sparrow became happy by the grace of Garuda. Similarly, the practice of yoga, especially bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness, may appear to be a very difficult job. But if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help. For God helps those who help themselves. Now in 25 more on this. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence, sustained by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. Now, we'll continue with this. This next verse is a very famous one. From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So what is the mind? The qualities, nischalati, manas chanchalam astiram. Nischalati means very agitated. Mana chanchalam means the mind is flickering, always jumping from one thing to another. And astiram, unsteady. So one has to control this mind like that and bring it under the control of the self. So now, Krishna describes increasing the mind, the yoga practice towards perfection. And when one controls his mind, he goes beyond passion, he goes beyond ignorance. His mind becomes peaceful, he becomes happy. And then he realizes his quantitative identity with Brahman. And the yogi who is a Brahmavadi is satisfied with that. But a devotee, because he's not interested in his own happiness, he's interested in pleasing Krishna, he goes beyond. The yogi, his mind is fixed on me, verily attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity with the Supreme, and thus he is freed from all reactions to past deeds, now in higher stages. Thus, the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination. So he's on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, no more matter. And then what does he achieve? The highest stage of perfect happiness and transcendental loving service to me. Brahma Sparshanam, being in constant touch with the Supreme, Atyanta, the highest, Sukham, happiness, Asnute, he attains. So by practicing free from mental, sensual engagement other than in Krishna consciousness, in goodness, one easily contacts the Supersoul, depending upon one's desire, and in this state he is Jivan Mukta. And then this hinted with Brahma Sparshanam that he's fixing on the Supersoul, and then it will describe it even more clearly in the next two verses. A true yogi observes me and all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. So all beings have the Supersoul within, but also are within the Supersoul. This vision is direct. He sees something inconceivable. And therefore, because he sees the Supersoul everywhere, the next text, 30, for one who sees me everywhere, this is the benefit of the vision described in the previous verse, and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So such a person who has learned, as described in text 29, seeing the Supersoul within and everywhere, therefore, he is never lost because he is always with Krishna. So he sees the all-pervading Supersoul as the sustainer of everything, including how Brahman is everywhere. So that is described in these two verses. I'm sorry for going so fast, but because I was slow in the beginning, I'm speeding like a rocket now. Now Krishna explains directly that he's talking about the super soul. Such a yogi who engages vajati in the worshipful service of the super soul, knowing that I and the super soul are one, remain always in me in all circumstances. 42. He is a perfect yogi. By comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. So this true equality of all beings was also explained in the last chapter. Brahmani, Gavani, Hastini, Suni, Shaiva, Supakesha, Pandita, Samadarshana. So this Samadarshana vision was obtainable where you see the same, the dog, the dog eater, the elephant, and the Brahmin. Is obtainable through Nishkam Karma when one comes to the Super Soul platform. It's also obtainable in through Astanga Yoga when one comes to the Super Soul platform. And because he sees the true happiness, the equality of all the living beings, he works for everyone's welfare. He should not give distress to others. He should work to help everyone. So this is a yogi. Okay. So we've raced ahead a little bit and we got two-thirds finished with the chapter. And still a third is left. Questions? Let's go. Go ahead.
There is a
yes, and in Patanjali Yoga, this is the goal of the yoga system, is to merge with the super soul. You locate the super soul and you merge into his body. So this is, there's so many traps and tricks that are offered to one. But a devotee is fixed in his determination due to his knowledge and his higher taste. He only wants one thing. When Maya or Krishna or Narayan or anyone offers him anything, he says, no, I just want to serve you. I'm not doing business with you. I don't want to become Brahma. I don't want to merge with you. I want to serve you. Huh? He can merge into the body of the super soul. But we don't want that. We have to make sure we don't want these things. That one, of course, we're trained in. We have to make sure in all our practices in Krishna consciousness that Krishna will offer so many material opulences, positions, this and that. We may have to take them, but it can't become the things that we want. The thing we have to want is to be engaged in Krishna's loving service. And become so fixed in that. That's ananya bhakta, ananya bhakti. Any other questions? Kovina,
please. In verse 31, is it that Krishna is going to the bridge between the realization and ananya realization?
No? Yes. Prabhupada explains in the purport. See, a yogi who is practicing meditation on the super soul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna as Vishnu with four hands holding kansha, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. He should know this if he wants Krishna. Krishna, the form of the super soul, is situated in everyone's heart. Let me just take a look over here. But Krishna is so tricky. I'm sure that other either yogis or mayavadis or whatever, they will pull out some other. Because look over here in the word by words. Mana api, he remains in me, right? Vartate, mai vartate, he remains in me. Sa yogi, such a yogi, mai vartate, he remains in me. Astita, sarvata, ekatvam. Ekatvam means in oneness, astita, situated, sarvata, in all respects, vartamana, being situated, he remains in me. So Krishna is so tricky. Yayata mam prapadyante. Whatever you want, he's going to give you the shastra that makes you think that it's exactly right. Therefore, one has to always hear shastra in the from Imparampara. Otherwise, it's undiscernible, practically.
You see that that verse states also that that yogi must go to a state of gratitude to be able to reach higher, to understand that Krishna is.
But worship, yes, yes. That's what the Mayavadis will say. Yes, you worship me, and then you'll, then gradually you'll understand that you are, you can merge with me. You have to give up, yeah, just like it says here, in oneness, ekatvam. This is also, though, explained in the 15th chapter, this kutosto. Okay.